This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Okay, good evening to everyone. Nice to see you all back again. So we're going to start with the Mesillas Yesharim this time. And we're going to start with the first chapter, the first parak of Mesillas Yesharim. Those of you who don't have a copy, it's worth getting one. Not just for the purpose of the shiur, it's just one of these sforim that one should have. They're available in Hebrew and in English. And it's a wonderful sefer to have. And secondly, in the shiur, you'll get a lot more benefit if you actually follow inside, because we're going to notice the words that he uses, not just the general phrases, but the specific words that he uses, and why he uses those specific words. The Mesillas Yesharim is one of the three real classics of Musa. The Chovas Halvovas by Rabbeinu Bechaya is one. The Shaarei Tshuva by Rabbeinu Yonah is the second. And the Mesillas Yesharim is the third sefer that is a real classic. So that even those who were opposed to the Musa movement, these sforim were always just sforim that they learned, they studied, they're absolute classics and have been in every generation. The Mesillas Yesharim plots out a process of human development, of spiritual development, and that's what's really fascinating about it. It's a methodology. He doesn't just lay something down or make statements. It's actually a process. He teaches you how to go through it, and he bases that on the Braisa of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyir in Avodah Zarah, where Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyir says that spiritual progress is a process, and it operates that it's almost a step-by-step process. Taking the first step lays the foundation for the second step, so that once you set it in motion, it kind of moves of its own momentum. And the Braisa of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyir starts off with Torah mevi'a lidei zehirus, that the study of Torah brings one to be careful, brings one to be meticulous in the observance of mitzvahs. So the principle Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyir is that the whole process of spiritual development, which culminates in nevuah, in prophecy, at the ultimate, that's how high a person can go, by working on himself. Nevuah, prophecy, is not some gift from God that a person's chosen to be a prophet. There is that sense of prophecy as well, but there's another type of prophecy, which is just the human capability of communicating with God, and that's the highest form of self-development, which one can reach by going through the process, a process that starts with Torah, with the study of Torah. The study of Torah brings a mindfulness, it brings an awareness, it brings an attentiveness, which leads to Zahirut. Then you start becoming conscious of what you're doing. And there's a lot of for both in psychology and in New Age spirituality of how important consciousness is. That if you're conscious, if you just become aware, if you can just watch yourself, if you can just see your ego when it kicks in, that already is three-quarters of the solution. The main problem of our difficulties in growing spiritually is that we're just not conscious, we're just not mindful, we just don't notice. But the moment we can notice, even if we don't do anything about it, just observe, just notice yourself. And it's much easier to notice yourself when you don't judge yourself. So if you're going to judge yourself harshly, then you become defensive against yourself. You keep on saying, oh, there you go again. That's shouldn't be doing this, mustn't be doing this. If you start judging yourself, it becomes very hard to stay conscious. Because the natural thing when you're being judged, what happens if somebody else judges you? What do you do when somebody waves their finger at you and tells you what a bad guy you are? What do you naturally do? You shut down. You don't hear it. That's our defense. So the same applies with us as individuals. If we are harshly judgmental about ourselves, we tend to shut down from ourselves and we cease to be mindful. So one of the techniques that is in meditation and Eastern philosophy, that's a fundamental technique, and we need to use it as well, is don't judge yourself. Don't throw guilt on yourself. Just notice. Because Zahirus, once you're noticing, You're already three quarters of the way there. Just observe. Just notice. Notice when you're about to get angry. Notice to say, huh, interesting, there you are. My temper's flaring. Notice when you're getting irritated. Say, there you are, you're getting irritated. Just observing and noticing your reaction to things already enables you to master them. The big enemy of self-mastery is mindlessness. So Zahirus then becomes the very first step of spiritual development. But Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yoyah says the step before that is Torah. How do you become mindful? How do you become conscious? The study of Torah is one of the mechanisms. Now the Mesillas Yeshurim doesn't start with Torah. He assumes you're already doing that, otherwise you wouldn't be learning Mesillas Yeshurim. He assumes you're learning Torah. So he starts with Zahirus as the first step in the process of spiritual development. And he gets to that in the second chapter. The first chapter is more of an introductory chapter, and that's the chapter that we're going to begin to learn tonight. That's Perek Aleph in the Chovas HaOlamos, Beveir Klal Chovas HaOdam Be'olamo, and the title is a clarification of the general obligation of a human being in his world. And let's just analyze the title. The obligation of a person in his world. Firstly, obligation. How do you take on an obligation? What happens? How do you become obligated? Where does an obligation come from?
Isn't it something external? Obligation is not something that you take on yourself. Somebody gives it to you.
Well, why would somebody give it to you if you didn't take it on? So how do you become obligated? Can somebody force you to be obligated?
If you
undertake something, you can undertake an obligation, would be one thing, a voluntary undertaking of an obligation. Or the other way, the way we most usually become obligated. So not mitzvot, sorry. How can somebody impose anything on you? You're not a victim. You're accepting an obligation. Why would you accept an obligation? Somebody can come up to you and say, you owe me 100 rand. Okay. Is that what you're going to do? What is it? How do you become obligated? But why would you make a commitment? The easiest way to become obligated. It's so interesting that you're struggling with that. How do you become obligated? Yes, by receiving something. The moment you receive, your balance sheet is in debit. Isn't that so? That's very simple. The way you become obligated is by receiving. We think by receiving, we've got something extra. I got something. When you get something, you're obligated with something. You don't get anything for nothing. You either get something because you did something, in which case what you're getting is in reciprocation for what you've already done, or it's in anticipation of something you will do. But you don't get anything for nothing. Never happens. If somebody is giving you something, it's either out of appreciation, you did something for me, I would like to reciprocate. So you've already done something. It's in reciprocation of an obligation. Or it creates obligation. If you receive something that you didn't, if you received something for nothing, an obligation is created. So what happens with in our relationship to Hashem? Where do our obligations come from? Yeah, the moment we're born, we've received. And, you know, the whole question of whether life's good for us or not, or whether we would be better off. But the fact is, we all cling to life pretty dearly once we've got it. So life is valuable. Let's accept that. Life is exceptionally valuable. The moment we're born and we start breathing, we're indebted. We're up to our necks in debt already the moment we're born. That's a chova, the idea. So here we have already a uniquely Jewish concept. That we're born indebted. And the important part, says the Mesillas Yeshurim, as we get into it, is the clarification of that indebtedness. What is it? We're born with a debt. The next important thing is the use of the word ba'olamoy, in his world. The Mesillas Yeshurim does not say a clarification of a person's obligations in the world. It's olamoy. We have to, each person has to look at their own world. Because how you define your obligations are different from the person next to you, Each person has to define their obligations in terms of their universe. Olam is a universe. Every person has a universe of their own. Every person lives in a universe of their own, with a system of its own, with an obligation of its own. So those are two very important. They understand the principle of chayva, that we have obligation, and the second thing is that we operate within our own worlds. So let's get into the beginning of the first chapter. And he says also here that just amazing usage of words that we have to unpack. Yesod ha-chassidus v'shoresh v'avodo ha-tamino hu. I'm going to explain to you, says the Mishnah Yeshorim, the foundation of chassidus and the root of perfect avoda. Avoda is a word that we're going to use quite a lot. And avoda can be translated a number of different ways. I would just call it practice, spiritual practice. So then the translation would be that I'm going to explain to you that yesod, the foundation of chassidus, of piety, of righteousness, and the root of avodah hatamima, of perfect practice. And avodah tamima, the Mesirat Yeshorim has already defined in the Hakdama, in his introduction to the Sefer, that the idea of tamima is a practice that is free of ego, a practice that is not there for any purpose other than the divine. That's avoda. The moment there's an element of self-interest in the avoda, it's not avoda tamima. So when what we're talking about is not just any avoda, it's not about actions. One might think avoda means activity, it means actions. No, avoda tamima is actions with pure intent. Actions that are not driven by ego, actions in fact that are completely free of ego. That's avoda tamima. And chassidus is piety, righteousness. Chassidus is a state of being, and avoda tamima is a state of activity. There's action in avoda. Avoda is action, and chassidus is a state of being. What's really interesting is that in Western civilization, the focus of success is around what you possess. About what you have. What degree do you have? How much money do you have? What job do you have? Status is determined by what you have. In the East, what is it? In Asian philosophies, what is it? What determines status? It's who you are. It's being. In Torah, what is it? In Jewish philosophy, what is it? It's what you do. Doing is the link between having and being. Because you've got to do something, if it's avoda tamima, you do something using who you are, you bring who you are into the action. If you don't bring who you are into the action, and we'll be talking about this a lot as we go through it, if you don't bring who you are into the action, and the action contains nothing of you, then the action is an automatic mechanistic action. It's a mechanical action. It doesn't relate to you. It's not expressive of you. So when we talk about avoda, when we talk about action, we're talking about action that expresses your being. So in Asian philosophy, it's just about being. It's about sitting and meditating and being and who you are. That's not Torah. In the West, it's about doing and in order to have, in order to possess. That's not what it is in Torah. In Torah, it's an exquisite blend of being and doing that results in having. And however you want to define the having, whether it's the having of accomplishment of mitzvahs, the accomplishment of business, the accomplishment in family, whatever you want, but there's results. When there's action, there's result. So yes, we are results focused. There is some level of result. But what we bring, the way we achieve that result is what's important. What are the actions with which we achieve the results? And who is the being that infuses that action with meaning? That's what's really important. Our actions have to have meaning. Our actions have to have values. We can't look at an action just as a mechanical action. In each of our actions, there has to be meaning. In each of our actions, there has to be value. And the chassidus is the state of being that we infuse into our actions. Our actions should reflect the chassidus of the person that we are. So he starts off talking about these two elements, the chassidus, the state of our being, the avodah, the level of our actions. And if we bring chassidus into our avodah, if we bring piety into our actions, we will have avodah tamima. We will have avodah, we will have actions that are perfect, actions that are free of ego. And what are we talking about? He says the yesod of chassidus and the shoresh of avodah. What's the difference between a foundation and a shor and a root? A foundation is static. You build a foundation, it's stable, it's static. The foundation supports the building, but it doesn't nourish the building. Roots nourish the plant. So avodah tamima needs to be continuously nourished. Chassidus needs to stand on a firm foundation. In order to have piety, the foundation needs to be firm, the knowledge base needs to be firm, the value system needs to be firm. That's the yesod ha-chassidus, that foundation of the state of your being. When it comes to the action, to having perfect ego-free action, that requires shoresh, that requires roots that nourish it. And we're going to be talking about both the yesod and the shoresh, the foundation of state of being, of piety, and the root of pure activity. Who? What is that? What is that foundation and that root? Sheyisborer v'yisames etzel ha'adam, that a human being should clarify for himself and validate for himself ma chovaso be'olamo, what is his obligation in his world? Ulamat sorich sheyosim ma batoy u'magamasoy b'chol asher hu amel kol yimei chayov, and therefore towards what he should apply his vision and his strategy in everything that he applies himself to throughout the days of his life. And so this first paragraph could be a really modern business strategist talking, saying you need to have a vision, you need to have a strategy, and everything you do should be tested against that vision and strategy. If it's taking you closer to your vision, pursue it. If it's not taking you closer to your vision, question it. And says the Masilas Yesholim, we need a vision for our lives. Each person needs a vision for their life, and they need a strategy. What are the steps to get to that vision? And the vision is Machoy Vasoy Ba'olam. What is your duty in the world? Now, in truth, what we should do at this time is we should stop. And if you are learning on your own, you would spend, I don't know, probably 20 minutes thinking about that. What is your duty in your world? So firstly, you would have to define your world. And we can just carry on reading the words and turning the pages. But that's not going to bring about any kind of spiritual growth. So your homework is to clarify, number one, what is your world? What is Olamoy? We know what the world is. The world is fine, but he doesn't say the world. He doesn't say you must clarify your purpose in the world. He says you must clarify your purpose in your world. What does your world look like? What is your world? So what are some of the components of your world? There's your family. There's your work. They're the other things that are components of your world. Put together. Write it out in a paragraph. What does your world look like? Draw it in a picture if you want. Do it in little stick diagrams if you want. Do it with kind of mind mapping techniques, any way you want to. But have a picture of what your world looks like. In fact, doing it with pictures would be far better than doing it with words. And if you do it with words, you should do it with some level of richness, descriptively. If you're describing your world, describe what it feels like. Describe what the people in your world look like. Something about them. So if you're going to write, you'll probably actually, it won't just be a paragraph. If you write, it's going to be pages and pages. Because you'll write something about each person in your world. You'll write something about your relationship with each person in your world. You'll write something about all the important things and elements and dimensions of your world. How many of you have ever really done that before? Actually put together a picture, whether in words or in diagrams, or even in your head, of what your world is. People talk about your worldview, but what's your world? Never mind your worldview. What's your world? And in what way is your world different from everybody else's world? So that's quite new. Who are the important people in your world? What are the important activities in your world? What are your important beliefs in your world? What are your important practices in your world? Put together a picture of your world. And once you've got your world, you've then got to ask yourself, what are my obligations to this world? What do I owe it? Now, why would you owe it anything? What did we say? Why would you owe your world anything? Because of what you got from it. So the first question you've got to do before you can talk about your obligations is ask yourself, what has this world given me? That's an interesting exercise. When you start looking at your world, having defined your world, start going through all the people in your world and look at what each one has given you. And God probably features there somewhere as well. Look at what He's given you. And nature might feature there. Look at what nature's given you. And your community might feature there. Look at what your community has given you. And your rabbi might feature there. Look at what he's given you. And your friends might feature there. And mention them by name. And look at what each one's given you. And give it time and thought. And all of a sudden you'll look at a whole portfolio of gifts that you've given, each one bigger and more magnificent than the other, and then say, okay, I've got a chayva. I've got some debts to pay. I've got some obligations. How do I reciprocate those obligations back into my world? But I'm going to do just the next line or two with you, because having laid the foundation that we just have, which is quite a frightening thought, as you think it through, you're probably already beginning to be a little overwhelmed by the size of the indebtedness. And I, at least, as I think of that, the overwhelming feeling I have as I think of this now is one of bankruptcy. I actually don't know that I can repay the debts. Well, that's quite a humbling thought. It's not bad to walk around knowing that you're bankrupt, instead of thinking that you're all full of credit, and that you owe more than you have. That's quite an important feeling. But let's look at it with respect to one being in the world, the Ribbono Shel Olam. What about him? So forget about the debts that I owe everybody else. That's bad enough. One could probably find, without too much difficulty, that take one relationship in that world that you've just described, and you might find yourself bankrupt in that relationship alone, unable to fully reciprocate. That's okay. It's a sobering feeling. Don't be afraid of the feeling. Sit with the feeling. It's not a bad feeling. One gets out of it. But what about our relationship with God? So just think for a moment what that's going to look like in terms of indebtedness. Now let's go into the next phrase. And what have the Chachamim, what have Chazal taught us about this? How do we acquit our indebtedness? What are we meant to be doing? We're supposed to have pleasure, delight, and joy in our connection with God. And next week we'll go into much greater detail as to why that's delight and joy, and what the role of delight and joy, where that becomes chayva. So what's our obligation? What's our indebtedness? And this idea that we can, our obligation could be to have pleasure. That's a very interesting idea, that obligation and duty merges with pleasure. Normally they're two different things. You've got the things you do for fun, and you've got the things you have to do. But to understand that in the essence of the Jewish vision is the merging of duty and pleasure is something that will give us some very clear insights into how to understand whether our activities are aligned with our vision and where we're meant to be going, or they're not aligned with our vision and where we're meant to be going. But we'll go into that in a little bit more depth next week.